The Planet Football Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code PLANET at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. We're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code PLANET for $20 off your first tickets.
There are a few things that happen in sports that you recognize instantly. This is truly historic. The quickest anyone has ever scored five goals in a game in the history of the top four European leagues, a history that goes back a long, long time.
That exhilaration that Grant talked about, just watching the five goal clips separate. I mean, they're still goals in isolation. I think you've got to probably watch all 10 minutes and really get a sense of the gravity of what he accomplished.
Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined today by SI senior writer Grant Wall and SI.com's Brian Strauss. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Brian, how are you?
I'm surviving the Pope's visit.
Yeah, well, we're about to get it. When's he coming? Friday, Saturday?
He's coming today, man. So we're recording this on Thursday. He's coming right by near the SI offices here in Midtown.
We should have had him on the show.
Big San Lorenzo fan. I saw my first Argentine League game at San Lorenzo at the Nuevo Gasometro back in the mid-90s. Wouldn't be surprised if the Pope, when he was not a Pope, before he was Pope, might have gone to that game.
Wow. So our sources are saying that Grant and the Pope have seen a game together.
I'm going with that.
Sure. Blessed. A little bit later in the show, we are going to talk about Robert Lewandowski going absolutely bananas, and then a couple of interesting topics in the world soccer landscape. Michel Platini saying some interesting things and a potential new competition coming to CONCACAF and CONMEBOL, as if there wasn't enough drama surrounding the one that they're trying to get off the ground next summer. But before we get to that, we have a pretty cool interview to share with you. Grant had the chance to talk to Bayern Munich's Xabi Alonso. Very cool interview, very cool guy. One of the more interesting players across the soccer landscape, if you don't know. And if you don't know, you're about to. So here is that interview.
We have our first Men's World Cup winner to join us on the podcast today. He is Xabi Alonso of Bayern Munich, formerly of the Spanish national team. One of my favorite interviews in all the world. Thanks for joining us today, Xabi.
Hello, good morning, Grant. How are you?
Doing well. Let's dive right in here. From a results perspective, Bayern Munich is off to a good start this season. You're perfect in the Bundesliga. You won your first Champions League game at Olympiacos. Your fans have high expectations. What are your thoughts on how Bayern has started this season?
No, of course, we are delighted. The first official game, the Super Cup, we couldn't win it, and it was kind of setback. But we needed to bounce back, and as you have said, in the Bundesliga, we have started pretty well, winning all the games so far. And in the Champions League as well, that's our duty. We have to try to win all the games because we know that at this stage you don't win the tournament, but you can lose them. Because of that, we are in a good run, but it's just early days.
Bayern Munich has won the last three Bundesliga titles by 10 points, 19 points, and 25 points. Is there any reason to think this season the race might be a little closer?
So far, there is a reason, and that reason is that Dortmund, they are looking really good. Wolfsburg as well, they continue being strong. So I think that probably this year, the gap between the champion and the second one won't be that big. But as far as we are the one at top, it doesn't matter how big is the gap. We want to be champion. We know that. It's a very demanding season for us because we are competing in all the Pokal, Bundesliga, and Champions League. We have to be ready for all of them, but But so far, it's good that for the Bundesliga that there are good teams, and this season, especially Dortmund, they are going to be a tough one to beat.
You've had a remarkable career, obviously. Just looking at where you've been, at your clubs, your hometown club, Real Sociedad, Liverpool, one of the classic clubs in world soccer where you won the Champions League, Real Madrid, which is Real Madrid, it goes without saying, and now Bayern Munich. I wanted to ask you about your role at Bayern Munich under Pep Guardiola. Has your role changed in any way from what it was at Real Madrid?
Well, yeah, because it's another club, it's another way that we train, and you know it hasn't changed. Well, I wouldn't say that it has changed, but it has updated and is richer my football knowledge for the last 12-13 months. I think that I have learned lots of things. I have improved. I have been able to test myself. If I was able to adapt and to get used to another league, to another big club as Bayern, and it's been a big challenge. And this next season that is coming as well, it's a big one for me, for myself. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but for sure this season is going to be really exciting for me.
You played as a sweeper in a three-man back line recently for Bayern, and I know you might have done that on one or two other occasions, right?
Yeah, well, as a starter, first time actually.
Okay.
It wasn't really a sweeper. It was like I had to be flexible and to be able to read the game and in which moment I had to be a center defensive midfielder, or sometimes I had to take 10 meters back and to be a center back or a sweeper, because that it was a circumstantial game when we didn't have many center backs. And so far, it worked quite well, and I was happy, and the manager was happy, and everyone was happy with the team performance and with my performance there.
How did Guardiola bring up the idea with you to play that position? What did he ask of you?
Well, mainly he asked that I had to be the ones that I had to take the decisions on the pitch. Mm-hmm. To know when I had to take a step forward or a step backwards. There was a moment when the ball was in one position that I was taking my side was in front of me, and sometimes it had to be behind me, because of that it was one of those games where you have to be more concentrated when you are playing in different positions in one game. But I felt quite well, and I felt that I had a good understanding of what was happening and what I had to do in each moment. So it was another experience, but I enjoyed it.
I'm amazed that somebody like you, who's been in world football for so long, talks about continuing to learn, because I always viewed you as one of the more intelligent players on the field. What does that say, that you can always be learning?
Well, I have always liked football and watching football and thinking about football and talking about football. And so far, after being lots of years playing in top teams as hometown, as Liverpool, Real Madrid, coming here, it's been like I have had to open my mind and to see different things, different approaches, different understanding or different systems and how to be flexible in one game, and that's what keeps me motivated, because I think that there is always room for improvement, and so far that's what I want in my career, in my football, and in my knowledge about the game.
You've played for some tremendous managers, five I think, who've won the Champions League. I was wondering if it would be possible for me to name them and ask you for sort of their defining qualities in your mind. Is that possible?
Well, it's difficult. It's difficult because each one as you've said, I have been lucky enough to be with big names of the last decades in football, as Guardiola, Mourinho, Del Bosque, Ancelotti, Pellegrini, Luis Aragonés, Rafa Benitez. So all of them, they have their own way to work. Some of them, they work more on the psychological side or in the team spirit, giving more responsibility to the players. And other ones, they like to be very methodic, very analytic, always paying attention to the detail. So far, with all the contact I have with all of them, you know, you think, oh, he's been good at this. The other one is good at this. So, and picking different qualities from each one, I think that I have a pretty clear idea of what would I like if I would be a manager in the future.
I guess the question.
But it's difficult to name. Mourinho, he's great on psychological side, or Guardiola is tactical, or De Bosque, he's a great man management. Each one, they have their own strengths, I would say.
Yeah. And you want to be a manager, correct?
I don't know. I know it's difficult job, because, you know, to deal with 25 players and to try to keep them always in the best mood and to get the best from everyone is difficult. Maybe for sure I will at some stage I will try, I will say that, but I don't know for sure. But first I need to finish my career, and after in some years maybe I will try.
You once said in an interview, "I don't think tackling is a quality, like a quality to aspire to." What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean that for me during the game, to be a good tracker or to have that quality, it's not something that you need to aspire to be one of your main qualities to be able to play good football. It's a good. It's difficult to explain because sometimes it's misunderstood. Mm-hmm. But I mean that it's like a resource, like the last resort when you are not in a good position and at the end you need to tackle. That's where you get at the end. Mm-hmm. But if you have understood the game and you are in the right position, maybe you don't need to tackle to get the ball. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can avoid the tackle before that happens. I don't know if I explain myself.
I think
what I mean, but you know.
I think you do, actually.
I do a lot of tackles, but I prefer to get the ball in a better condition without the tackling, of course.
Is it somehow related to, I remember Paolo Maldini would always say that if you are in good position, you wouldn't need to go to ground very often.
Yeah, that's something like that. If you are on the ground too much time, you know, at some stage you need to tackle, because if not, you don't get the ball. But if you spend too much time on the ground, probably something is wrong. Something is wrong with your position on the pitch.
Gotcha. We talk in the United States of our national team here trying to keep its good qualities, the hard work, the toughness, never giving up, while trying to become better at possessing the ball against top teams. The Spanish national team seems to have an identity. The U.S. national team is trying to find its identity to maybe over the years get a new one. Is that possible to do, and how long will it take to get there?
Well, I think that the U.S. team is getting better and better, you know. You could see in the last friendlies they have beaten Germany, the current world champion. Of course, we know it's a friendly. But, mm-hmm. but it takes time, because the youth players, they need to believe in that identity. The coaches, they need to be really patient on working on what they want. If they want a team that they want to have the control, or they are more a counter-attacking team, or more to build that spirit and to build that idea, it takes some time. I don't know how long, because it depends on the players that you have. But for me, in the States, you know, I have that feeling that for the last decades, they are doing things pretty well, and better players are coming. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in the near future they will be competing for the big things.
Okay. Just a couple more questions here. Appreciate you taking so much time. some of your old teammates, like Steven Gerrard with Liverpool, like David Villa with Spain, they have come to Major League Soccer this year. Have you had a chance to watch their MLS games much this year on Eurosport? Do you have any thoughts about the league?
I haven't been able to watch many games because here I couldn't watch them, but I have been talking with Stevie, and he tells me that, you know, for him it's been another experience, but he's not relaxed. You know, he tells me that he's really professional and the level is good enough, is very good, and he's enjoying it so far. So for sure that, not just for me, for many players, it could be like another option in the future, and that it might be something to consider for the future.
Well, I know your contract with Bayern ends at the end of this season. You may stay in Europe afterward. You've also expressed some interest in MLS or China. What is it about MLS that intrigues you?
Well, it intrigues the country. It intrigues the growth that is the league having, you know, to bring the experience that you have, the knowledge, and try to help a team. So that may be another approach of the football that you have had for the last few years here in Europe, but try to adapt and to be able to bring your what you have learned for the years. But, you know, at the moment, I keep my mind open as always, but I'm not thinking about what's going to happen. At the moment, I haven't decided anything.
Quick music question, because you have great music taste. You came to Southern California back in 2012 and tweeted, I think it was a Pavement song video. How would you describe your taste in music these days?
In music these days, well, any moment, you know, you get this with the Spotify. I have good friends that they love. I'm not that much into what's on the latest, you know, but I keep a track on, you know, Pavement or the Wilco or these guys that I like. But, you know, at that moment it was the right song to tweet, because I was there in California and I have loved Pavement for 4 years.
Nice,
they are pretty cool.
Lastly, you look at the history of Champions League, and there is only one player, Clarence Seedorf, that has won Champions League titles with three different teams. You have that opportunity, having won the Champions League with Liverpool and Real Madrid. What would it mean to you to become the second player to achieve that?
Well, of course, that's the big goal of the season, for sure, because to be part of such selective club with just one member, it's an honor, and of course if I will be able to get there, I will be very happy with. I would have never dreamed that my career would be so good, and it would be the perfect ending of my career if I would achieve that. But it's a big one, you know. We are competing with the big boys in Barcelona, Madrid, Chelsea, Man U, all the big ones. So we will see. We'll see in May what happens at the end of the season.
Xabi Alonso, thank you. As always, great to speak to you. Good luck this season.
Okay, thank you. All the best.
Take care.
Hey, guys. I want to tell you all about the best new way to find an amazing deal on football tickets or football tickets, the SeatGeek app. And when you use our code PLANET, you'll get $20 off your first ticket buy. The SeatGeek app takes less than a minute to download, and it's free on iPhone and Android smartphones. SeatGeek does a ton of things that other ticketing sites don't, like aggregating from big ticket sites. Just like when you search for flights and hotels online, SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers to create a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available for that game, all on one page. No need to go anywhere else. They also have this great feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of the venue, so you can easily identify the best ticket values in the building at a glance. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can complete the purchase with just two quick taps. There's no faster way to buy tickets. So to redeem your promo code and save $20 on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today, enter our promo code PLANET in the app, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go see MLS matches, the NFL, college football, or the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app and enter our code PLANET to save $20. All right, welcome back. That was a great interview, Xabi Alonso. Really cool guy. Well, I mean, you've talked to him before. You put him on your list and in your recent mailbag of one of the best interviews.
Number two of my all-time top 10 favorite interviews in soccer. Really smart guy in more than one language. Just really seems to think the game. And you heard him talking about how he just loves thinking the game, talking about the game, playing the game. When Alex Abnos, the producer, and I were talking about this interview right after it happened, we were like, he's good in English, and it's a good interview, but if in Spanish you think he might be even more interesting talking about what's happening on the field. One of the cooler guys in soccer. I've always called him the George Clooney of soccer. Would love to see him come over to play in MLS. I think he could bring something to the league. He's just 33 still. I think he's got some time left.
So he's got 4 more years until he signs with NYCFC.
Probably so. we're seeing 37-year-olds like Drogba, doing well in MLS. And, love the fact that he likes Pavement has good taste in other movies and music. I like the way he said Stevie in that interview.
Let's go on to one of his teammates. You talked to him over last weekend before Bayern Munich played against Wolfsburg. They played this week, and Robert Lewandowski went absolutely bananas.
Lewandowski's been on the field less than 6 minutes, and he scored his fifth goal of the season for Bayern Munich. I'm surprised he's had 3 touches already. He's had the golden touch, and he's fired another one in! Lewandowski, Bayern Munich superstar from the bench. Can't get it in, he has now, though. What a hat-trick that is. Dante, wrong side. There'll be no let-up. There's Lewandowski! Oh, no! Oh, my word! That's the best of the bunch!
5 goals in 9 minutes. If you haven't seen it, you're probably not going to see anything like it ever again. I don't know. I mean, it was one of those things that just you couldn't believe it while it was happening. I kept looking down, trying to get some work done. And he kept scoring. It was nuts, and it was one after the other. It was a hat trick in 4 minutes, I think, 4 goals in 6, and then the best goal of them all to cap a 5-goal run that completely turned a game on its head. And it's a game of two really good teams. Wolfsburg beat Bayern Munich for the German Super Cup in the Champions League, one of Germany's better teams, and Lewandowski just absolutely took over.
We're very quick in today's world. I don't know if it's a social media thing. I don't know what it is to judge something the best ever, the worst ever, and not really have any sense of history. And so usually when you see someone saying that, it's idiotic, and it doesn't ring true when you actually look at the history. But one thing I'm struck by, and I think this Lewandowski situation is part of it, is that there are a few things that happen in sports that you recognize instantly, this is truly historic. And you can characterize Lewandowski's output here in different ways. It's the quickest anyone has ever scored 5 goals in a game in the history of the top 4 European leagues, a history that goes back a long, long time. So that's one way of looking at it. But also, I'm just kind of marveling that as soccer fans in the last couple of years, we've seen, I can count 3 things now, if you include Lewandowski, that are truly historic, things that you just see and you're like, in real time, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. So Lewandowski's 5 goals in 9 minutes is one. Carly Lloyd scoring 3 goals in the World Cup final in the first 16 minutes of the game, including from midfield, is another. And Germany 7, Brazil 1 in the World Cup semifinal is another. And these are three things that no matter how long we live, I think if you're going to remember. I mean, you're going to remember where you were when it happened. You're going to remember what you were feeling. And that exhilaration that you get when you see something like this that just defies belief is one of the main reasons we watch sports. You don't even need to be a soccer fan to appreciate these moments. And, you know, I was just minding my own business watching this Wolfsburg-Bayern game, which in the first half was pretty pedestrian. 1-0 Wolfsburg, mildly surprising. Wolfsburg might win for the first time ever at Bayern. Lewandowski didn't start. How do you like to be Thiago, by the way, who comes off at halftime for Lewandowski, who then proceeds to do this? Just the idea that when you're watching sports, something amazing can happen at any moment, and this was one of those moments. It was a pleasure just to witness the whole thing.
Yeah, it was nuts. And you talk about Germany, Brazil, Carly Lloyd. Those obviously happen on the World Cup stage. This is, you know, Bundesliga regular season. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Just nuts. And the side volley. You wrote about this in your mailbag. It like dinged off the audio microphone that was on the goal. I love that you phrased it that he literally dropped the mic, because he did. It was nuts.
I was in the car as this was happening, so my timing was terrible, but it was funny. It was funny watching on Twitter the people freaking out over the third goal and the people freaking out over the fourth goal, like overlapping. Like they were happening so fast that people couldn't keep track of their freakouts, you know? So, oh my God, it's 3. And then another tweet, oh my God, it's 4. Followed by a guy still figuring out that he scored 3 and then on to 5. And I mean, it was mayhem. It was, you know, the thing is, and we saw Landon Donovan tweet about this, and I agree, having missed it live, I would love to just watch those 10 minutes in full. You know, I think that's really what allows you to you know, that exhilaration that Grant talked about, just watching the 5 goal clips separate. I mean, they're nice goals, and obviously the 5th one is spectacular, but they're still goals in isolation. I think you've got to probably watch all 10 minutes and really get a sense of the gravity of what he accomplished.
Can you believe that this is a guy who scored 4 goals in a Champions League elimination game against Real Madrid, and that's nowhere close to the coolest thing he's done?
That's crazy. Brian, you're talking about the social media meltdown. I thought my favorite meltdown was Wolfsburg's English account. Just one after the other, you could just like, you could see them just being more defeated by each one. It was just like, what the hell? What is happening? What? It was... It's great. Well, definitely, like, you don't ever know what you're going to get in midweek action, especially when it's not Champions League, but this is why you tune in.
Well, and also, too, I mean, I know I work for Fox, but having the chance to watch the Bundesliga on a regular basis, this is a really good league, and it's nice to be that it's available now to a wider audience than it had been in the past on Goal TV. And I also get the sense, now, granted, this was Bayern winning 5-1, but I do kind of hope that it's going to be a little closer this year. You know, we talked about that with Xabi Alonso. I don't think Bayern's going to win the league by 25 points this year, or maybe even double digits. Maybe they will, but it's nice to see. I know Dortmund finally dropped points for the first time, but Dortmund's been playing really good soccer. Wolfsburg is a good team, despite what happened. Note, by the way, it was Dante in the central defense who was part of the 7-1 loss for Brazil to Germany as well.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, definitely look out on Planet Football. Actually, we'll have a piece on Dortmund and what's made them so dominant coming from Levy Bird. It kind of breaks down how they've bounced back this year. And I'd also love to get all of your thoughts on Lewandowski's performance. Was this the best thing you've ever seen? Was Ronaldo's 5 goal game better? I mean, I don't think so, but, anything Messi's ever done? Is this better than his performance against Real Madrid? Anything? Just let us know on Twitter, SI_soccer, or you can just leave a comment for us on this episode, either on Planet Football or on our SoundCloud page. We will take another quick break and then come back to wrap things up with some interesting topics happening around the world of soccer. even though all of us here at Planet Football know what the real football is, it seems like everyone is playing fantasy football, like in the NFL. And if you missed out on a preseason draft, FanDuel has you covered. Now you can play with up to $200 in bonus cash with our code PLANET on FanDuel.com. You've probably heard of FanDuel somewhere before, but here's what it's all about. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They will pay out over $75 million a week this football season. Look, we all love fantasy football, but a lot of fans miss out because the whole season is just too much of a time commitment. FanDuel does away with all of that. You can draft a team anytime and drop into tournaments for weekly cash prizes. Entry fees start at just $1, and there's a league for everyone. Week 3 NFL games are already live in the FanDuel lobby, so you don't have to wait another day to start building your teams. Over 1 million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel, and now it's your turn. So go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner using the code PLANET and sign up now. There's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use our code PLANET today, so don't get left out. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Try it out today. All right, guys, let's finish off with a couple things that have been going on in the soccer world that I know you guys have some strong opinions on. We'll close the show with a little bit of fire. I think that brings the best out of all of us.
Chicago Fire.
That's maybe one of the things that you feel the most passionate about right now.
The Chicago Fire certainly bring the best out of their opponents.
That they do. Tough times for the Fire. Obviously, firing Frank Gallup, Nelson Rodriguez coming in as their GM. But let's move on to Michel Platini, who is launching his FIFA presidential bid. But he told the AP today something interesting. And again, we're taping this Thursday. That he might have told the U.S. that he'd vote for them for 2022 before turning around and voting for Qatar.
This is great, by the way. And my favorite part isn't that he actually told the U.S. he would vote for the U.S. before he then voted for Qatar, but that he said today he might have told the U.S. this. Yeah. As in, oh, I'm not sure, but maybe I might have said this. Like, either you did or you didn't, buddy. So part of me actually has a little respect for Michel Platini. He's one of the very few people who voted on that day in 2010 for the World Cups in Russia and Qatar, who actually has said that I voted for Qatar. And now he's basically saying the head of France's government asked me to vote for Qatar, which, if you follow FIFA's rules, is an interference of government in soccer affairs and should probably cause Platini to be removed from any consideration for whatever. Instead, he's going to likely be the next president of FIFA. Everyone over in Europe tells me that he's the guy who's going to win, that he wouldn't have announced his candidacy if he didn't know he would win. So he's gotten the support of people he needs around the world to win this election.
No, I was going to say, I think it's worth noting that Qatar won the election 14-8. So had Platini voted for the U.S., it would have been 13-9, and Qatar would still be hosting the World Cup.
That said, people in U.S. soccer think that Platini controlled more than one vote, and that they do blame him for being the guy who swayed the election, who caused the U.S. not to win that.
Can't wait to see who the U.S. votes for the next FIFA election.
That seems easy, but it just proves, again, I mean, there were stories that came out after that quote-unquote election that, you know, the executive committee members, the voters, didn't even like read the bid books, didn't even pay attention to sort of the technical aspects of the bids, and the, you know, I guess it was Sarkozy telling Platini to vote for Qatar because he had some kind of trade deal with the government there. Again, it never had anything to do with soccer. It was never about the soccer. It was never about the tournament. It was always about the politics and the finances and all of the sort of the geopolitical machinations that make this sort of thing work. No one on the FIFA, I bet these guys aren't even soccer fans. They're not even in it for the soccer. They don't even care. So, you know, the U.S., again, the U.S. entered this contest naively. The U.S. entered this contest without understanding the rules of the game, without understanding how and why the winning countries would be selected. They went in and tried to pitch themselves as a country and a federation that would host a great World Cup in nice stadiums with nice infrastructure, and nobody gave a damn. So this doesn't change my view in a sense that – and again, and you're right, credit to Platini for coming out and saying he voted for Qatar. But this doesn't change my view that this was a contest the U.S. never had a chance to win because they were playing by different rules than everybody else, and they should have known that before they spent tens of millions of dollars.
I've always agreed with the naive notion of the U.S. bid, which, you know, I think it was probably a clean bid. I think that was part of the problem, why they lost, in the sense that they didn't really have a chance. I am looking forward to Michel Platini coming to New York, or at least to the U.S., I think to New York, as part of the campaign. They announced that this week. Prince Ali is also coming to the U.S., I'm told.
Let's get him on the podcast.
We would love to have those guys on the podcast.
I'm sure they're listening. Guys, you're welcome. Come on down. See our luxurious podcast studio at the Time and Life building in Midtown Manhattan. All right, let's turn to something else that's in the news. CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. According to some reports, there is a movement to get a Champions League-style competition between the two confederations. Brian, I'll start with you on your thoughts on the possibility of a potential competitor to UEFA with this magical, huge competition.
I want to ride a rocket ship to the moon, you know, so I'm going to go to the press and tell them to write a story about how I want this. I mean, they're, you know, he even admits in the article that he hasn't even spoken to CONCACAF yet, MLS, Liga MX, any of these. So this isn't a movement that's starting from within the confederations. This is a guy who controls TV rights, who's saying, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Let's do this. And that's the extent of this. And so many people jump on it and say, oh, man, you know, this could happen. This is under discussion. It's not under discussion. This is one guy who wants to get rich by selling the TV rights to this tournament he concocted in his head. And as Grant mentioned in his mailbag, you should go read that. I love those things. We would need the flights from the west coast of the U.S. to cities like Sao Paulo and Buenos Aires are 15 to 18 hours. It's not happening. It's a non-starter. Until we have wormholes, this tournament's not happening.
Couple things I would say here. I agree with Brian. I think this is very unlikely. ACL, probably not the best acronym for that you want to use. ACL, usually not a positive thing when we see it in the sports media. I think that's...
The America's Champions League is what it would be called.
Yes. Yeah. And then also, too, I mean, this whole push for CONCACAF and North America to be involved with South America and soccer things, that's nothing new. In fact, I remember looking at an old back issue of Sports Illustrated from like 1978, a story about the Cosmos talking about how, oh, maybe they'll get involved in the Copa Libertadores, but they didn't even spell Libertadores right. Nice job, Sports Illustrated. And so this has been around for years and years and years, this idea. And we have seen Mexico get involved with Libertadores, and it's been good for the competition. It's been good for Mexican soccer. I love Copa Libertadores, as does Brian, I know. It's just from a logistical perspective, very hard to imagine teams from Canada and parts of the United States being able to compete midweek all the time with teams in South America. So, and also too, I mean, like, this is another negative thing coming out of the fiasco around Copa America Centenario, is that when people think of this idea to combine the two confederations, now you think of shady stuff. And, you know, so this guy who has media rights comes along, Silva, and says, I want to do this. And he's not CONMEBOL or CONCACAF either, you know. And yes, I guess he signed Paul Tagliabue, the former NFL commissioner, as a consultant. I'd actually love to sit down with Paul Tagliabue and ask him what he knows about this. And do you know what CONMEBOL is? Because I don't know if he does.
Yeah, the timing probably couldn't be worse with Copa America Centenario under the microscope and you know, happening either in the U.S. or Mexico or not at all, or U.S. soccer pulling out and this and that. It's a fantasy idea. I can't see it taking off.
Outside of DC, where the attendance has been terrible, there's been a real sign, I think, in some other cities that fans are starting to get a sense of what the CONCACAF Champions League is about. They've had some good crowds in Seattle and Vancouver and Salt Lake. And if these changes that they've proposed go through, where they move shift back to the calendar year, and they go back to the 14 groups that put U.S. and Mexican, MLS and Mexican teams together in the group stage, we might see the CONCACAF Champions League, which is not even 10 years old, I think, or you know, we might see this finally start to get some traction, and maybe some time from now, this tournament is a bit of a bigger deal and is more of a carrot for teams and less of a nuisance, more interesting for fans, more prestigious. I mean, that may happen. It's still very young. But again, the idea that MLS teams with limited rosters and limited budgets are going to fly halfway across the world, because that's how far it is. It's 15, 18 hours, that they're going to do this for a midweek game and then fly back and then play a league game on the weekends is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
All right, moving on from that, let's close with some news regarding the all-important CONCACAF Cup and talking about oddly named competitions. USA and Mexico both have had a ton of players in the news for a bunch of reasons. Chicharito scoring his first Bundesliga goal for Bayer Leverkusen, Fabian Johnson coming back from injury for the USA and scoring for Borussia Mönchengladbach, but then some big injuries for Mexico, Grant. Andres Guardado, Rafael Marquez. Say what you want about Rafa Marquez, but he's kind of important to Mexico, and now he's out for this playoff.
Yeah, Guardado was the best player for Mexico during the Gold Cup, was the player of the tournament. There might be a tiny chance that he's available, I'm now seeing, but it doesn't seem likely at all. He got injured during Champions League play for PSV. If he is out, and it sounds like he probably will be, then that's a big loss for Mexico. And we're starting to see now trends leading up into this game, and maybe this gets into the old Jurgen Dust argument from Brian, that Jurgen Klinsmann is the luckiest man alive. Some positives for the U.S. in the injury column. Fabian Johnson, back playing, scores a goal in his first game. Now, granted, he did that playing as a left midfielder, and Klinsmann wants to play him at right back. But the fact that he's back is a really big thing for the U.S., which didn't have Johnson or Clint Dempsey for those games last month. And Rafa Marquez, we like to laugh about Rafa and say, oh, you know, he was terrible in MLS, and he was. But he's really important, just like you said, Avi, to Mexico's national team. And that's a loss for them as well. So I still look and I see Mexico had 7 players playing in Champions League group stage on match day 1. The U.S. had 0 and will only have 1, Fabian Johnson, when he's healthy now. And that's a concern as well.
Brian, do you think this tips the scales at all? Any of the recent happenings? I mean, Mexico, look, if Guardado and Marquez are both officially out, their provisional roster is now down to 30.
I do wonder if the U.S. wants Rafa to play, because he's just as likely to do something insane that helps the Americans as you know, something that helps Mexico. But yeah, no, I like Grant said, Guardado stirred the drink during the Gold Cup. He's tough to track. He's very creative. He's a weapon. Mexico still has a lot of talent, and this is still going to come down to the U.S. I mean, I know this is not the team that Jurgen has wanted to build, but for 90 minutes on October 10th, this is going to have to be classic grit, you know, classic American, getting stuck in and countering and taking your chances and staying, you know, keeping your shape and staying composed and all of the things in the past that have helped this team draw level with Mexico over the course of time, because you know they play smart, they don't make mistakes, and they take chances when they present themselves, and that's how the U.S. is going to have to win this game, and Jurgen is going to have to you know pull in the reins a little bit on the idealism and on the team that he wants to build, and for 90 minutes play to win the game in front of him, and that'll be the difference.
Maybe Herm Edwards will give the pregame pep talk. You play to win the game.
He's had stranger pep talks, so he's had weirder guests come in. So that would be very appropriate.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. I think that'll probably wrap it up for us this week. I want to thank Xabi Alonso again for taking the time to talk with us. For Grant Wall, Brian Strauss, our producer, Alex Abnos, I am Avi Creditor. We'll talk to you guys next week. We'll have a U.S. Open Cup champion to talk about, so keep an eye out for that next Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City versus Philadelphia Union. And that'll do it for us on the Planet Football Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.